Welcome to the Center of Everywhere podcast, where we explore stories of rural Minnesotans who are making a difference in their communities. Rural isn't in the middle of nowhere. It is in the center of everywhere.
Welcome to Season 5 of the Center of Everywhere podcast. I'm Julie Tesh, and I'm the President and CEO at the Center for Rural Policy and Development. We are a private, nonpartisan, nonprofit organization based in rural Minnesota, where we are dedicated to providing data-driven research on rural issues to help our policymakers make more informed decisions affecting the rural people and places of our state. Today, I am with my colleagues, Kelly Ash and Marnie Werner, to talk about our brand new research agenda. So hard to believe, guys, that this is season 5 already. I don't know where the time has gone.
Yeah, really.
Did we determine this was a COVID, a pandemic response doing the podcast?
I think so. I think we were talking about doing the podcast, and then the lockdown just kind of accelerated it. We were like, right, what do we do now? Let's do a podcast. Okay.
And here we are. And I know we have a good number of listeners too. So those of you that have been with us the whole time, thank you. And those of you that are new, welcome. Season 5, we're excited to be here. We'll release a podcast about every 2 weeks here for the next several months, and talking about our research topics and what's going on in rural Minnesota. So I guess we'll jump right off. And we have a brand new research process. We have had the same research process, how we determine our research topics, for quite some time. And it was typically yearly. So every year we would send out a thought leader survey to a few thousand thought leaders and people across the state. And they would help us determine and rank what we should be researching. And so that has worked really well for us. But also, we're getting really, really good at opening up a topic. Actually, I think we're quite good at it, opening up a topic, but we're not able to go deep enough because our research agenda is only 1 year. And so this year, we worked really, really hard, and want to give Kelly a lot of credit for working through all of this, but we have a new way of doing our research agenda, and it's a 3-year process. Or it's for 3 years. And so, Kelly, I guess I'll turn it over to you if you want to explain what exactly it entails and how we're looking at it and how we're sorting things out.
Yeah, thanks. I think, you know, we went through a strategic planning process over the previous year now, set a new strategic planning. And one of the things that kept rising up was our inability to stick with a topic, dig a little deeper. You know, we would tend to come in on a topic, highlight it, kind of blow it up a little bit, and then have to turn our attention to something else because of that annual way in which we were setting our research agenda. And that way of doing it had some good strengths to it. We were quick, we were nimble, we were able to focus on topics quickly if we needed to. It was also a good gauge on like what everybody was super concerned about. But if anybody is in the public policy or the rural community and economic development field knows, like, most topics last longer than a year, right? So every year we tended to have the same topics pop up over and over again: housing, childcare, downtown revitalization. These are always the topics that just kind of ended up being, in from the opinion of rural leaders, to be the top of the list. And then we heard back too, it's like we would focus on something but not get to that solutions area of things, because we just didn't have time, because we were kind of turning our attention quickly to a whole bunch of other different things. So during the strategic planning process, we said, how might we develop something, a broader research agenda with these worst research questions, and be able to just stick with it for 3 years? And we decided that instead of sending out a survey of everyone and making this kind of like the most popular kid in school who gets the most votes kind of process, we decided to do a more interview-based or interview-focused process. And so we went out to some of our closest friends in the field, Minnesota Initiative Foundations across the state, the Association of Minnesota Counties, The League of Minnesota Cities, the Greater Minnesota Cities Partnership, and University of Minnesota Extension were our kind of core group that we went out to, and we just sat down and we talked to them. We had already developed a little bit of an inventory of all the different kinds of research questions that we knew were kind of important in the field. We all live in rural Minnesota. We travel extensively. We talk to a lot of folks. So we kind of had a good idea of what were some of the issues, as well as being able to think ahead a little bit and be like, all right, these issues in the next few years or next 5 years are going to be a big deal. They probably wouldn't get voted on in like a popular survey, right? But we know they're important enough to start raising these issues now. And so we kind of presented this list to these organizations and had a really in-depth conversation about what they thought of them, what were priorities, what was missing, what did they feel like maybe we could all collaborate on, who was already working on something so we wouldn't step on toes. And through that process, we were able to really hone in on a few different things. And one thing I will say is that we got overwhelmingly good response to this change in our process, in particular, setting the research agenda so it lasts 3 years so we can go a bit deeper. And people were also very excited about us getting more towards, you know, we call it like solutions-based reports, but really just like bringing forward, here are all the different ways in which people are trying to solve this problem. So highlight a problem, provide the nuance, maybe some of the data behind it, but then also, what can we do about it? What are some ideas? We will never, I don't think, be in the realm of like, this is what you should do as policymakers or anything. It's more of, here's some possibilities and things to think about as we move forward. And people were pretty excited about that. So I'll just go over real quickly the main themes that kind of we got top priority list. The first one, and these are in no order in terms of importance. So all of these that we're presenting are of equal importance and that we're kind of moving forward each year for the next 3 years. The first main theme was remaining resilient in an aging rural Minnesota. So that has to do with like, how are we going to care for our elders? How are we going to fill our workforce needs? As these folks retire, we're just getting older in rural Minnesota. It is a demographic reality. So how are we going to face that? So that's the first one. The second one, the future of rural access to well-being. This is a big theme. So it includes not only healthcare in terms of our physical self. So looking at healthcare consolidations and things like that over the next 3 years, but also the sustainability of rural EMS, as well as access to mental health and addiction, which Marnie and her collaboration with MSU Mankato and the Center for Rural Behavioral Health has really opened up that bag and really diving deep into that. We're pretty excited to talk about that here in a second of some of the research projects coming out this year. Up next, the role of rural places and people in a shifting infrastructure and environment. This one really is focused on a couple different things, but a big one is, what is our role in the changing energy infrastructure? As people are talking about more solar panels, wind turbines, ways of producing energy, the shutdown of coal power plants, things like that. These all, rural Minnesota has a big role to play in the future of this. And we're hearing from a lot of folks about, you know, what say do we have in all of this? How might rural areas benefit from a largely kind of extractive industry? Energy is typically almost always extractive, even in renewable energy is extractive in terms. So so that's going to be a really interesting topic, as well as kind of how might rural areas start adapting to some of the climate change issues, particularly regarding their infrastructure. Another one, there's only a couple more. These are big themes. That's why we have 3 years to do them, because these are huge. Funding local government and changing times. It just seems like this comes up every single year. Anything from how do we fund our aging water and sewer plants to the continual conversation and discussion around local government aid, as well as I think maybe not relatively new, but something that has become intense over the past few years is the increasing incivility among and towards our civil servants and public workers. We're just hearing from a lot of folks that people aren't interested in running for office or being county administrators or city administrators. It's getting increasingly difficult when it seems like us and our neighbors are increasingly unable to be civil towards each other when having political conversations or even policy conversations. So we're excited to get started on that one as well. And then the last one, kind of a not smaller one, it's something we've been focused on for a while, is a new future for rural childcare. And this is going to continue what Marnie, you know, brought up and kind of raised or put a spotlight on quite a few years ago, probably 2015, I think, was that first report you put out, somewhere in there. We're moving towards, obviously, still talking about some of the nuance and some of the barriers to childcare, but also getting more towards that kind of talking about solutions and ideas and possibilities and funding mechanism, things like that. So pretty excited to move forward with that. So those were the themes that we presented to our board of directors. They were really excited about it, had a lot of discussion under each of those themes. We started filling out even more research questions, and we're pretty excited to move forward over the next 3 years. It's a big ask. It's a big list. But at least I feel like we're very focused on these things. And it's going to be nice for Marnie and I. We're each going to have our topics that we each get to dig into instead of jumping around to a whole bunch of different little things. Or not little. They're always big. But maybe things that aren't related that we have to kind of shift our brain to a whole different way of thinking. Maybe hopefully do a little bit less of that and dig in deeper. So.
All right. Well, because before, for our listeners, you know, Kelly would be, you know, he's our workforce person. And then a few years ago, it came up, rural EMS came up, and he jumped into that. And that was a brand new topic. So he started from square one on that. So brand new. So going from workforce all over to rural EMS, that's a huge leap.
Yeah. And then I think in between there too was, oh, can you just break down the education formula?
That's been a lot of the problem with this 1 year schedule is that there's such a learning curve just to learn what these topics are and what they're about, that by the time you actually learn where the issues are and how to write about them, the year is over.
Yeah,
exactly. You
know, well, so, not only that too, I think we, during our strategic planning process, we're actually trying to find ways in which we can also have parameters around how do we say no to some of these things that pop up too, right? And I think that'll be helpful. And for any of our listeners, you know, absolutely bring us topics and issues and things to look at. But we're going to be a little bit more, if it doesn't fit into one of our main themes, it might be more challenging for us to shift gears to look at something else. And we might have to say no. And again, we would love to take on everything, but there is three of us. And even though we're hiring a few other folks to do some contract work with us, it can be challenging to take on some disparate issues. So,
absolutely. And I will say, with the 3 year process, I'm finding it easier too that we can plug in, you know, so talking about whether it's rural mental health or whatever, we can plug that in and be like, okay, this year we're going to do this part. Or we're not going to get started on this until year two. You know, it's kind of we can plug it in better instead of like all of a sudden everyone like, oh my gosh, I have three lit reviews to do on three separate topics. And we're really good at getting all of our reports done like at once, which is good, which is not good. And so hopefully, you know, you're going to be seeing now reports coming out a little more staggered. And so, yeah, so we're really excited about that.
And I think our communications team might be a little bit happier about that, too.
Probably. I think our communications team will be a lot happier about that. And so,
I think, you know, along the lines of learning, too, I mean, there's always this, we're scaffolding our knowledge, right? So we kind of start at the base level and we creep up. And now we get to take everybody with us on that journey a little bit, which I think will be a lot more useful, too, is like every report will scaffold on the previous report itself. So that'll be good.
It'll be good. And just the partnerships that we're building too. I mean, we've turned into a convener, whether it's our webinars or other gatherings, you know, just to be able to talk about this. And so, that I like that vision of the scaffolding. That's exactly what we're doing. Want to switch gears, but not really, but one of the ways that we're able to do this and cover these topics over 3 years is we have a new internship program that we started this summer. And we hired 8 interns. We went from having an occasional intern to 8. And we learned a lot. but it was all good. But I want to ask Marnie and Kelly, both of you each had 4 interns. And if you just want to, Marnie, why don't you tell us about the interns you had and what they're working on and how they're contributing to the process moving forward?
Yeah, sure. Well, I had 2 of my interns I put on childcare issues, and 2 of them I put on mental health issues. And so Ryuto, who's from Japan, he worked on an idea that I've been kicking around for a while that I never had a chance to really sit down and look at, which is, are there assumptions about child care providers, particularly family child care providers, that are built into the regulations that are not necessarily true anymore? And to make that sound a little less cryptic, the fact is that 98% of child care providers are women, and women on average now are getting married later and buying homes later, becoming homeowners later. And these were factors that, because of the nature of family child care, which is the in-home child care, the structure, kind of the structure of operating family child care, was dependent on the idea that the woman was married and had a husband's income to rely on and things like that. And so as the Department of Human Services is doing their regulation modernization project, where they're going through all the regulations, I wanted to see if this was something that was actually baked, something that is not true anymore, baked into the regulations, and if that needed to be addressed. Because the fact is, pay is still on average low enough in childcare that women just have a lot more options than they did 40 years ago when the initial regulations were written. And so he's been looking into that. Sabine, who's from Nepal, has been looking into the added cost to childcare for looking after children with special needs. And then also those non-traditional hours, like overnight hours and things like that. And then Yu, who is from China, has been working on reimbursement parity for mental health services. So that just means, are psychiatrists and therapists and mental health providers being paid the same amount for their time as, say, a doctor or, someone similar in the physical health side? And then Bilal, who is from Bangladesh, has been looking at the concept of anchor members of the community. This is something that we first talked about with our suicide and suicide prevention article back in February. And that's the idea that, especially in rural communities, it's true everywhere, but in rural communities, people tend to if they're feeling down, if they're feeling, they have problems, whether they think, I must have a mental health problem or something or not, they have people that they'll go to, whether they're siblings, cousins, friends, their pastor, that they'll go to first before they will, go to a doctor or a psychologist or a therapist, to seek help. And so we wanted to look more into who these people are, what the nature of the relationships were, and if there's some way that we can harness this to help with, getting better access to mental health services in rural areas. That's showing some promise too. So the interns were all starting with the literature reviews, which was basically looking and seeing what else is out there, what's been researched and written about already. And so they've come up with some pretty good literature reviews that are showing a lot of promise. So I'm looking forward to that.
I was going to say, we should mention that these are all graduate students and they're all interested in rural, and they're students at the University of Minnesota, Minnesota State University, Mankato. I believe we have somebody from Cornell. Do we have someone from Illinois?
Yeah, Urbana-Champaign.
Urbana-Champaign. And so the fact that we're able to kind of find the best of the best for us to have our graduate student interns is phenomenal. Shout out to the University of Minnesota to CFANS, their Applied Economics Department. That's my alma mater. I know, Kelly, you have a couple from there that are cranking out numbers for you that are just fantastic. And our MSU Mankato students have been wonderful. So it goes to show that we're building connections with these graduate students, and graduate students are interested in this research. We had a nice pool of applicants. So, Marnie, thanks for telling us about your interns. Kelly, why don't you tell us about the projects that your interns were working on?
Yeah, so we had I had four as well. The first one is Josh Sadler, who is a student at the Humphrey School of Public Affairs. And he, you know, we did this project on Southwest Minnesota student graduates in Southwest Minnesota high schools. We tracked kind of where they ended up working, where they moved to, things like that. It was a great report. We got the data from the Office of Higher Education. It was a partnership with them. And in the future, we're going to be expanding that research across the entire state. So not just Southwest Minnesota, but look at other regions of Minnesota. But I had this data set and I knew there's it's a gold mine of information in terms of really pointing out some nuances in the data. And when I did the research, I noticed one thing was kind of non-white students. So students that were identified as BIPOC, so Black, Indigenous, person of color. We noticed in particular, some of the nuance was those students in particular tended to, after graduating high school, not have a Minnesota employment record and not be attending college. And it was interesting. It was significantly different among these population groups. And we know in Southwest Minnesota, there's a pretty large population of refugee and immigrant populations, as well as Native Americans. And so Josh dug a little bit deeper into looking at our American Indian students and kind of like, okay, how were they doing things differently compared to the rest of the population of their high school peers? And so he dug into that. He's still digging into it and taking a look at that, those numbers and trying, you know, tell that story. How differently they do they kind of, I don't want to say behave, but what pathway do they take that might be different than the rest of the high school graduates? The other student that was working with this data set was Madeline Smith, who was a contact that Julie had. She had grown up in Southeast Minnesota. I think graduated, I forget where she did her undergrad, Julie. Was it University of Minnesota or it was? Okay.
Yep, the
And
good
now
old
she's
U of
at
M.
The U of M. Now she is a graduate student in applied economics at Cornell in, what is that, New York? I think
New
it's New York,
York,
right?
yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So pretty bright student. And she was taking that data set and looking at, in particular, all the other BIPOC student graduates that weren't American Indian and looking at that group to kind of figure out what were some of the differences there. Again, you know, they tended to, at a much higher rate, not have a Minnesota employment record, nor be going to college. So that either means they're working someplace else or staying at home, left the country, not sure. So she was digging into that. So we're excited to see those numbers. Madeline's actually going to be continuing on with me all semester as we start diving into the rest of the Minnesota regions, looking at postgraduate pathways that high school graduates are taking. So excited to have her on board. The other student I had was Mafatso, and a student from Africa that is currently in the Department of Applied Economics at the University of Minnesota, super smart guy. And I had him look at two things. The first thing being, as our rural populations start to age, will there be an impact on sales tax revenues? This is particularly important for areas that have local option sales tax implemented in their region. And we do know that as people age and get older, the best what they consume tends to change. And they tend to consume things that are in the non-taxable basket compared to goods that are taxed, right? So we're just kind of curious, like, is this going to play a big role in it? He looked at that and admittedly, it doesn't seem like it. There was no big aha moment, like, oh yeah, there's going to be significant changes. But he got a lot of information in the literature review, just looking at how the basket of consumptions does change quite a bit. And so it was kind of fun just to take a look at that. So if people have questions about, hey, we're a little bit worried about our aging population, you know, should we be worried about our sales tax revenues? Probably not. And largely we know that local option sales taxes are typically done in places where tourism is the big winner. And so, you know, they aren't overly reliant on their local population in raising sales tax revenues. So he looked at that one, and then the second one he looked at was kind of a quick overview literature review on as we start to shift away from coal generated power, in some of our rural counties towards more solar panels and wind turbines. Kind of what does that look like in terms of property tax revenues, as well as just like trickle down, like as investments are made in solar panels, will we see that trickle throughout the community? And it's something we haven't dove deep into yet. And so we really wanted someone to just do a literature review and take a look at that and take a look at some of the initial numbers and find out what's going on there. And so he is producing a summary of the literature and all that. We're excited to take a look at that. Not sure if there will be an official published report out of that from the Center for Rural Policy and Development, but we do have another contract researcher that's also digging deeper into this particular topic that will pass the information on. Mufasa did a great job and it was really fun to get to know him. He was in Africa during the summer, so we were having meetings at, I think 10 a.m. and it was like 6 o'clock for him. So it's always kind of interesting time difference.
The last one is more.
Yeah, Mirazin Yu, who just started with us. So she didn't do a summer project, or she started in mid-August, early August. And she's doing a literature review on three different things. The first thing are, what are the challenges and solutions to temporary housing for tourism workers? Kind of a big deal, particularly in northern Minnesota. How might small businesses that are dependent on snowy winters survive a changing climate? Is diversification of their business even a possibility, right? So what does that look like? And then third, what financial assistance and tools do small rural tourism businesses wish they had access to? So we're pretty excited about that. She really, she's at the Humphrey School of Public Affairs as well, and has been doing a lot of things around tourism, particularly international tourism. But we were excited to have her expertise, and she was excited to kind of expand her knowledge on just rural tourism, particularly ecotourism and what that looks like. So she's going to be doing a lit review on that. Hopefully by the end of her semester, we'll have a report on that. So yeah, it's been exciting. It's been fun. We're learning a lot. And each one of those things really fell under one of our research themes that we have over the next 3 years. So we were excited to just kind of like start digging in on a whole bunch of different things that totally fell in line with our themes. Mm-hmm. So
our interns are obviously a vital part of what we're looking at. And I would suspect that we'll continue doing that internship project program in the future. So if people are interested, you know, let us know here next year. We'll probably be hiring again for the summer again, but let's dig in and just give a really good topical view. We've talked about the buckets of our research agendas. We've talked about the interns and what they're doing, but Marnie, you have the first report coming out of the chute here. Very quickly, why don't you talk about the report that's coming out and then what other areas you're going to be working on in the near future?
Yeah, this report was a big one. This was very hard to get my hands around, which makes me glad that we're going to this 3-year system now, because this one was suggested by one of our board members, and it was just in terms of children's mental health and access to services. What do parents do? How do they get services for their kids? We all know that there's a shortage of mental health services, and that is because of, it's not a shortage of buildings or whatever, it's a shortage of people actually delivering the services. And so we know that's a problem. We also know that children's mental health is a big problem, especially since the pandemic. It was actually declining quite a bit, quite fast since 2010 or so, 2012. It's been going down, but then the pandemic just kind of really put the skids under everything. And so now talking to people in schools and whatnot, they're just kids' behavior and everything is just getting worse. And it's not necessarily that more kids are having more problems, but kids who have problems, those problems are getting worse. So maybe even for kids that you didn't know were having any mental health issues like depression or anxiety, it's just getting worse. And so we decided that instead of reviewing the problem so much, because we know there's a problem already, let's look at what we already have for resources in rural areas. And so that's largely what this is going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about three areas where that will help parents figure out what to do. And one is just education. The second one is behavioral health integration into primary care. And the third is school-linked mental health services. And we're going to have a whole webinar on this next week on September 12th at noon. So sign up if you haven't already. And yeah, so that report should be coming out early next week. And I'm excited to get this out as kind of the first shot in this particular topic.
Absolutely. We're excited for it to get out as well. And then after that, what will you be working on?
You know, I'm not actually quite sure. I have a number of things to choose from. We'll probably be expanding on some of what the interns have been working on.
Yeah.
And then I myself will, I'm sure, still be working on a mental health topic of some sort, but also probably looking into that incivility issue
Absolutely.
for public servants.
Awesome. And Kelly, what I know you have some things coming down here in the fall as well. We have quite a few things coming down in the fall because both of you have projects, but then we do have some, you know, contract researchers that are working on some small business succession, some topics on the Iron Range. But Kelly, why don't you tell our listeners about what you're working on and what will be released here in the fall?
Yeah, so I'm working on two things at the same time right now. The first one is looking at the nuance behind migration trends. You know, it's been kind of a heavy conversation, particularly since the pandemic, about, you know, has there been a lot more migration? Has there been a kind of an exodus out of our urban areas, things like that? And a whole bunch of data has come out, and we just thought it'd be a good chance to kind of get everybody on the same page as in terms of what's going on in migration. It's going to be a real quick data brief. Just looking at, all right, here's the trends, and, you know, whether they keep going or not, things are changing quickly again. The pandemic, you know, caused a big blip in the data, and now everybody's kind of like putting their hands up like, okay, are they going to go back to normal trend lines pre-pandemic? So we're going to do a little report on that, which I'm pretty excited about. And then the second one is looking at the number of nursing home kind of availability, bed availability in nursing homes. What have been the trends behind those in rural Minnesota and the Twin Cities? What does that look like in assisted living as well? We hear a lot about that. People concerned, like not only facilities shutting down, but people closing wings because of staffing issues. So we're going to put some numbers behind some of those worries and concerns and take a look at, you know, is this something that we really should be worried about in the future? What might it look like? So that'll be out. Well, the migration one, October for sure. And the nursing home one, probably October or November, will be that one. I know we're going to have a webinar on that one in November for sure. I think we could probably get it published before that. So yeah, those are the two main things.
That's awesome. You know, what I love most about our research is that we take those topics. So like you talk about nursing homes and number of beds, and you hear anecdotes everywhere, like, oh, they're shutting, they're closing. We can actually put numbers to it and we can tell the story. And so that is what I love most about our research, is we can tell that story from the numbers, and we know it's true because it's data driven. So really excited about both of those. So you guys, I know we have a lot to do, a lot to get going. I hope our listeners will stay with us here, season 5 of our podcast. As you can tell, we have a lot going on. We're all very passionate about rural Minnesota and rural America, and we're really excited to get the research out there. Hope that you'll stay along with us. And typically our research year, we start now and then we'll go through the end of June. And so we have a legislative session coming up here starting in January. And so a lot of our research will end up in legislators' hands and city council, county commissioners. So the election really doesn't influence our work, because we get information to decision makers regardless, but there might be a lot of new legislators or returning legislators that I know will be looking for our work. So thank you both for being with us today. Look forward to the work that you're going to be doing. And thank you for our listeners for joining us on season 5. We hope that you'll continue with us on this journey this year. Have a great day.
You've been listening to the Center of Everywhere podcast, where we explore stories of rural Minnesotans who are making a difference in their communities. Rural isn't in the middle of nowhere. It is in the center of everywhere.